Sangha Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Alright, so Omagana Tibiranda Shaganjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So today is a very auspicious day in the Vaishnava calendar. It's called Vamana Dwadashi. It's also Vijay Dwadashi. It means victory. And it's the day that Lord Vamana Dev appeared, the dwarf incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he appeared to trick Bali Maharaj into giving everything and leaving the heavenly planets which he had captured from the demigods. But we're not going to speak about that tonight because we spoke about that this morning. So what we're going to speak about this evening is about Srila Jiva Goswami. Now, there are six Goswamis in Vrindavan, and Jiva Goswami is the youngest of the Goswamis of Vrindavan, and he is considered to be the most erudite scholar practically of all time. In India, there's many universities that have their philosophy departments named after Jiva Goswami. And he's most famous for a book called the Shatshandarbha, which we'll talk about at the end of this discussion. But a little bit about his history. Jiva Goswami was the nephew of the two first Goswamis. The first two Goswamis were Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, who were brothers. Rupa was the younger brother, Sanatan Goswami was the elder brother. Now these brothers, they were working for the Muslim government. And at that time, the Muslim government there was very cruel to Vaishnavas. Not all of them, but most of them. And the person who was in charge was called the Nawab Hussein Shah. And he made these two brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, work for him because he threatened to kill all the Hindus unless they worked for him. And the reason he wanted them to work for him is because they were very expert and honest. It's hard to find honest people. Like I was talking to Sanatan the other day, I said, why don't you hire intelligent people? He said, because they'll figure out how to cheat. And they'll open up their own businesses later with the information that they got from him, right? Is that true? That's what he told me. So these two devotees, Rupa and Sanatana, of course they were called Davir Kash and Sakara Malik, they actually were from high-class Brahminical families, originally from South India. They were from the Saraswata Brahmana community. But because they had been working... Hare Krishna, Govinda. So, because they had been working for the untouchable government, it was considered that they had lost their caste. That's an interesting thing about Brahminical standards. That according to the Vedic system, Vedic is the Vedic system, all you Arya Samajis would understand this. According to the Vedic system, if you even work for someone who is not Vedic or Vedic, you lose your caste. And you become an outcast. Pretty good, isn't it? Does anybody here have a job where they work for someone who's not a devotee? Everybody has that sort of job. But you work for your wife, she's a devotee. Right? She's a great devotee. Except for Sundar Gopal. So everybody else. So according to that system, everybody would be considered outcasts. Of course, we don't follow that system, fortunately. We follow the Pancharatriki system and the Bhagavat Vidhi system. So if we chant Hare Krishna, then we're saved. But of course, we have to follow the rules and regulations too, to avoid deviating from the Brahminical or the mode of goodness standard. But these personalities, Rupa Sanatan, and also their brother Anupama, were working for the Muslim government, and as a result of that, they had taken names that were actually different than their birth names. And their names were Shakara Malik and David Rakash. And so they were living in a village called Ramakeli, the three of them together. Even though they were devotees, they were forced to do that. So in this village, Ramakeli, a great personality came to visit. His name was, anyone know his name? He had golden complexion. He danced a lot. And chanted Hare Krishna. Anybody have an idea who that was? No. I'm embarrassed. You're supposed to be Hare Krishna devotees. So his name was Lord Chaitanya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he came to visit them. And of course these three devotees, they are Nitya Siddha devotees. That means they descended from the spiritual world. Rupa Goswami was a Rupa Manjari in the spiritual world. So, anyway, so he came and he saw these devotees and they approached him in a very humble way, taking straw in their teeth. And they said that we are lower than Jagai and Madai. Because Jagai and Madai, they may have done a lot of horrible things like killing people. But we actually work for people who killed many more people, the Malechas. We were under their employment. So please save us. Because you are the most munificent. Namo Mahavinaya Krishna Prema Padayate. Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gorjase Namaha. You are the most munificent incarnation of Krishna. Why munificent? Because you're saving everybody, giving out love of Godhead freely. So anyway, so they saw Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and in addition, there was a little baby there. His name was Jiva. Of course, we're talking about Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami got an opportunity as a little baby to associate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Interesting, isn't it? But after these three brothers, that is, Balava, who was Jiva Goswami's father, and the two others who were the uncles, Sanatana and Rupa, they associated with Lord Chaitanya. They didn't want to stay at home anymore. They just wanted to join Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they were making plans. First of all, Rupa Goswami left, but Sanatana Goswami couldn't leave so easily. He tried to give an excuse why he wouldn't work for the Nawab Hussein Shah. He had the doctor's report that he was sick. Sometimes you do that. You send a notice to your business, I'm on sick leave today. And then they come home and they find you dancing and chanting in ecstasy. Isn't it? When I was young, of course I wasn't dancing and chanting, but when I was young, I would sometimes take the thermometer and put it in hot water. You know what I'm talking about? So it'd be very high temperature, 100 degrees. And they said, oh, you should be dead. I better not go to school then. So they did the same thing. Rupa and Sanatana and Upama did the same thing. I mean, especially Sanatana Goswami did that. But then the Nawab came to his house and he discovered that Sanatana was just making believe he was sick, but he was actually hearing Bhagavatam. And eventually the Nawab got so angry with Sanatana Goswami that he put him in jail. And Sanatana Goswami had to do what most people do when they want to accomplish something in India. He bribed the jailer. It always works. And so he offered some gold coins and he got out of jail and he went to Vrindavan. And of course Rupa Goswami was accompanied by Anupama first. And Anupama, Rupa Goswami, and later on Sanatana Goswami all left their home. And there was this poor little Jiva without his uncles and his father. Terrible, isn't it? And his mother was there taking care of him, so he thought, at this time he was a little older, probably about 8 or 9 years old, but he really wanted to leave home and join Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Can you imagine an 8-year-old boy wanting to leave home and join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So he really wanted to do that. And so he waited until he was about 18 years old. He was also worshipping Gornatai deities at home and Radha and Krishna deities at home. And he would always have dreams of Lord Chaitanya dancing. When he was a little boy, like 6 or 7 or 8 years old, he would always dream about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So eventually when he became about 18, his mother passed away, and he went to Navadvip to see Lord Nityananda. It's a very interesting story. This story is told in a book by Narahari Chakravarti called the Bhakti Ratnakara. Some of you may have read this book. You've read the book? Very interesting book. So he went to Navadvip, and he actually went to the house of Shivas Thakur, and there he met Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda took him to see Sachi Mata, who was the mother of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sachi Mata at that time was dressed in white, and she was very frail, older. And every day Sachi Mata was offering food to her Nimai, the deity of Nimai. And every day Vishnu Priya, Nimai's, widow or wife, because he took sannyas. When someone takes sannyas, the wife is considered to be a widow at that point. So every day she was offering and chanting japa, and she would just eat one grain of rice for each Hare Krishna at the end of the day. Pretty good. So one may question, why is the Lord so cruel? That's another point. Why is Krishna so cruel that practically every one of his pastimes, he's cruel to his girlfriends, he's cruel to his wife? Like when Krishna appeared as Lord Ram, what did he do? He sent Sita Devi away. It's very cruel. What sort of God are you worshipping here? When Krishna was in Vrindavan, he left his girlfriends. Isn't that extremely cruel? When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, his wife was only 16 years of age. Maybe you should worship someone else. What do you think? Now, actually, the mood of separation that the Lord and his devotees experience, especially the Lord and his conscious experience, is the highest mood of intense, let's say, connection. It's not like the material world where you're separated from someone, you're actually separated from someone. And when you're with someone, you're not with them because the souls never have a meeting of minds. You understand? You may be holding someone's hand in some Bollywood movie or something, but you're not actually with them because you're thinking of one thing and they're thinking of another thing. But when the pure devotee or Krishna's wives or whatever are thinking of them, meditating on them, then they're with Krishna. It's like when we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna's there. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddha Nitya Mukto Vinatvam Nama Nama in the whole. So, getting back to the story. So, Jiva Goswami met Sachi Mata, and Sachi Mata, that's Lord Chaitanya's mother, not the Sachi Mata here. That wouldn't have worked. So, because it was many years ago, about 500 years ago. So then she blessed him. She blessed Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami also had a very similar complexion to Lord Chaitanya. He was golden colored. Very amazing. Actually, Srila Prabhupada was golden colored too. Any of you, of course, I don't think, of course, Bhagavati saw Prabhupada. He was golden. I remember the first time we saw Prabhupada, he sat down on the Vyasasan, and his footprints were glowing golden after he got up on the Vyasasan. Amazing, isn't it? And when I went to Prabhupada's room, 1971, I went to Prabhupada's room, Prabhupada was just dressed in a gamsha. He was golden colored too. It was like glowing gold. It was overwhelming. So, that was Prabhupada. Top the country. So Prabhupada was gold too. So anyway, so what happened is that Lord Nityananda met him, and then Lord Nityananda took him on the Navadvip Mandal Parikrama. They visited all the holy places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees, and they met the devotees who were there still, like Advaitacharya, Srivas Thakur, and he received the blessings from all the devotees in Navadvip. Then Lord Nityananda said, you have to go somewhere to get educated in philosophy. So you have to go to Benares. Benares is usually a place for Mayavadis. But in Benares there was this Madhusudana Vachaspati, who was a great disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And he knew the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was a very, very erudite scholar. So Srila Jiva Goswami went and he studied with him for a number of years and became even a greater scholar by that time. And then he remembered Lord Nityananda's instruction that he should go to Vrindavan and assist Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. So he proceeded to Vrindavan. And when he arrived in Vrindavan, he offered obeisances at his uncle's lotus feet and offered his service. And he said, I want to take initiation. But what they said was, first you have to be tested. That's very important. The test to see if someone's ready. Because ISKCON were very lenient. But actually, he was made to serve Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami by editing their books, proofreading their books, and doing menial service, massaging their legs, and cleaning up their facility. And this way, it teaches a devotee the right consciousness. Actually, that's the training that everyone should have, that they are menial servants of Krishna. Servants of a servant of a servant of Krishna, Gopi Bharata Padakamala, Dasa Dasa Dasanu Das. Not that we just, if you just think you're serving Krishna, you're third class. And you don't serve anyone else. We mentioned this before. But we serve everyone. And we see everyone as an aspiring devotee. And anyone who chants Hare Krishna even once, we see them as a Vaishnava. You offer obeisance, at least in the mind, according to Srila Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar of Instruction. Right? At least in the mind, you offer respects to such a person. And never hate anybody. So anyway, Jiva Goswami was trained up in this way, and eventually he accepted Rupa Goswami as his guru. Took initiation from Rupa Goswami. Sanatana Goswami was older, but he deferred the act of giving initiation to Srila Rupa Goswami. And then he was further tested or even chastised by Rupa Goswami at a particular juncture. What happened is that this great scholar named Rupa Narayana Saraswati, who was a Digvijayi. A Digvijayi is someone who goes around India challenging people to debate. You've heard of that before? Like there was one who challenged Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to a debate, and he got defeated soundly by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because the goddess of fortune left his tongue and he was making mistakes. The goddess of learning, sorry, Saraswati, left his tongue. And so this Rupa Narayan Saraswati came to Vrindavan to challenge the scholars, especially Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. So he went to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. He said, I challenge you to a debate. And Vaishnavas, they don't have time for such things, unless it's to preach or glorify Krishna. But a Vaishnava doesn't have that propensity to defend himself. That's an animal propensity. Everybody understands that? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Four animal propensities. Of course, we have to eat. I'm not saying give that up. And you have to sleep, but not too much. And mating, those who are householders, have nice Krishna conscious children. But a Vaishnava should not defend himself. When a Vaishnava is criticized, then we can defend another Vaishnava. But if someone criticizes me, I should not say, oh, I'm going to defend myself. It's not true what you said. We should just humbly say, yes, you were right. Like one time, Srivast Thakur was blasphemed. They left the ingredients for worshiping Durga outside of his house. And he opened his door. He said, okay, everybody sees now I'm worshiping Durga. But he wasn't. But the person who had done that to him, he got a reaction. A very heavy reaction. He had leprosy at that point. So Vaishnava doesn't defend himself. So Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, when they were challenged by this Digvijayi pundit, they basically said, all right, we'll sign a paper saying that you won. And No problem. And so they signed this paper. It's called the Jaya Patra. That means, Patra means like a leaf or a piece of paper. Jaya means victory. So they wrote on the paper, this Rupa Narayan Saraswati has won the debate. Even though they never debated with him. They just wanted to get rid of the guy. So then he was going around showing this paper to everybody in Braj, everybody in Vrindavan. And then Srila Jiva Goswami happened to see it. And he said, well, would you like to have a debate with me, Prabhu? And he was thinking, this Rupa Narayan Saraswati was thinking, yes, he's a little guy, you know, little young man. What does he know? If I defeat him, I'll become even more famous. So for 7 days, they had this debate, back and forth. And when Jiva Goswami was finished with him, this poor man had a call of nature. I don't know if you understand what a call of nature is. I don't need to explain it in the temple room. Anyway, he couldn't control certain aspects of the body. What? Anyway, I'm not going to tell you what it is yet. If you're not intelligent to understand what it is, then I'm not going to mention it in class. So he ran away. And Jiva Goswami was so happy that he had defended his uncle's honor that he ran to Rupa Goswami and he said, look what I've done. I've defended your honor. And then Rupa Goswami, instead of saying thank you very much, he said, you have taken sannyas a little bit too prematurely. Anyone who's in the sannyas order should not be proud of defeating someone or take pride in fighting with someone or defending. So therefore, I banish you from Vrindavan. So he was kicked out of Vrindavan. And he went to Mathura, and he lived in the hollow of a tree for one whole year, just eating very little every day, just little fruit or something like that, basic diet. But what happened is that he was saved by his older uncle, Sanatan Goswami. So Sanatan Goswami went to Rupa Goswami thinking that Rupa Goswami was too heavy with Jiva Goswami. And so he said to Rupa Goswami, he said that there is some order of our master, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that you're not following. And Rupa Goswami was thinking, what order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu am I not following? I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I'm writing Vaishnava literatures, I'm excavating the holy places, I'm helping Vaishnavas. And then Sanatan Goswami said, the one order you're not following is Jiva Doi. Jiva Doi means compassion to Jiva souls. But there's one way to take, another way to take it is compassion to Jiva Goswami. So Rupa Goswami understood that, and then he asked Jiva to come back. And Jiva Goswami came back, and they had a nice relationship. So that's how strict one has to follow the guru. That the guru says, we banish you, you don't lose faith in the guru, say, oh, I need to find another one. I want a second opinion. Isn't it? Oh, he doesn't mean, I hear this all the time. He doesn't mean what he says. Actually, I know what he means. Even though he says something, it means something different than what he says. You ever have people do that? I've had a lot of disciples who do that. And you didn't really mean it. I said, yes, I did. He said, oh, I need a siksha guru. You understand. So, anyway, so getting back to the point about Jiva Goswami, that Jiva Goswami then, after the Rupa and Sanatan left this world, he became the instructor, spiritual master for the next generation of Vaishnavas. Next generation of Vaishnavas was Narottamadas Thakur, and Srinivas Acharya, and Shyamananda. And they preach Krishna consciousness everywhere else, at least in eastern India. Because Braj is sort of the middle of India, and then they went to eastern India. And they began to preach. And Jiva Goswami, interestingly enough, He taught more about Swakya Ras, that means Krishna being married to the gopis, than Parakya Ras, because his disciples were not advanced enough, many of his disciples were not advanced enough to understand the Parakya Ras. And people sometimes would criticize Jiva Goswami for doing this, but Jiva Goswami knew what his disciples were ready to hear. Just like sometimes you'll find people say about Prabhupada, the Prabhupada only gave you the ABCs. And join me and I'll give you the XYZs. I think you understand what I'm talking about. But Prabhupada gave us the ABCs over and over again because we were still in kindy. You know what kindy is? Kindergarten. And when we're ready for the XYZs, Prabhupada will help us understand them too, and our guru will help us understand them. Because talking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose appearance day it is tomorrow, a Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to deal with people who were trying to teach XYZs to complete neophytes. And so Srila Prabhupada understood our position, that means all of you, us, and taught very simple Krishna consciousness. And later on that's all revealed. Anyway, so he taught his disciples about Swakya, and then of course the deity he installed, the deity worship, he worshiped is Radha Damodar. And this Radha Damodar deity, it's described in the books of the Acharyas, this Radha Damodar deity was personally made by Rupa Goswami and given to Jiva Goswami. In other words, it was a deity that Rupa Goswami either oversaw the making of or somehow or other did the original mold or something. So this deity was actually coming from Rupa Goswami. And Jiva Goswami established the Radha Damodar temple, which a very famous person lived in. Who is that famous person? Before coming to the West? That was Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada lived in that temple, and that temple was the main meeting place for many of the Goswamis in Vrindavan when they would discuss Shastra. They would meet there and take prasadam. There's a central place there in the temple. Anyone who's been to Vrindavan has visited that temple. And Prabhupada said his eternal residence is in that temple. And Prabhupada has two rooms there. Prabhupada would look over the Vajan Kutir and Samadhi of Rupa Goswami and derive great inspiration in that temple. So Jiva Goswami was able to build that temple because he had the help of the emperor, the Mughal emperor, Akbar. Because one time, Akbar came to see Jiva Goswami, and when he came to see Jiva Goswami, he came to this place called Nidivan. Anyone here been to Nidivan? Of course you have. That's the resting place of Radha and Krishna. It's a little forest, Nidivan. And he came to that place and he had an ecstatic vision of Krishna there. By Jiva Goswami's mercy and potency, this Mughal emperor had a vision of Krishna and his pastimes of Krishna. And he was so impressed with Jiva Goswami that he helped Jiva Goswami. He actually assigned an architect, his right-hand man, and gave money and all sorts of whatever other necessities that Jiva Goswami needed to build the Radha Damodara temple. He was a great follower of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Actually, Akbar was trying to be someone who could bring all the religions together. This was his intention. He was upset that the Muslims were fighting with the Hindus and, you know, whatever religions were there, they were fighting with each other. So he was trying to come to a common meeting ground. He would regularly have meetings between members of different religions to discuss how they could all work together, like interfaith meetings. Quite interesting. He's a great personality. And Jiva Goswami worked with him very closely. Another time Jiva Goswami went to Agra to see Akbar, and there was a discussion there among some sadhus as to what was greater, the Ganges or the Jamuna. So, can anybody think of what's the greatest river? Ganges or Jamuna? Which is better? Any votes here? Ganges or Jamuna? Which is higher? Why? What? Jiva Goswami says Jamuna, because the Jamuna is Krishna's consort. And the Ganges, I mean, we're not saying anything wrong with the Ganges, but the Jamuna is Krishna's consort, and the Ganges washes Krishna's feet. So the Jamuna is actually married and has a relationship with Krishna. So so he was able to prove philosophically that the Jamuna was on a more exalted platform. And he was very, Akbar again became very pleased. Jiva Goswami also met with this great female poetess named Mirabai. You've heard of Mirabai? It was an interesting story that Mirabai wanted to meet Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami says, I don't really meet with ladies. And then Mirabai said to him that actually no one is male anyway in Vrindavan. And Jiva Goswami understood, because Jiva Goswami, this is very interesting, because Jiva Goswami's ontological position is Vilas Mandri. Your family member, right? Vilas Mandri. That's who he is in the spiritual world. So, anyway, so many interesting stories about Jiva Goswami. He was born approximately in 1513 of the Christian era, and he lived for 85 years. I mean, we don't know the exact dates because it wasn't recorded at that particular time. So that's the story of Jiva Goswami. And I just want to, I just want to read Prabhupada's summary of the Shatsang Dharma. Jiva Goswami compiled many, many literatures, of which the most important is the Shatsang Dharma. That means the six Sandarbhas dealing with Abhideya Sambandha, Abhideya Prayojana, the three aspects of Krishna conscious philosophy. Understanding who you are, who Krishna is, what is your relationship with the material world is, what Krishna's relationship with the material world is, then acting accordingly, that's bhakti yoga, and then finally going back to home, back to Godhead. So the Sandarbhas describe this in great detail. So I have here Prabhupada's description of the Sandarbhas. Of course, there's another wonderful book by Jiva Goswami that I'm reading right now. It's called The Gopal Champu. Some of you may have heard about this book too. Wonderful book. Jiva Goswami is so erudite. The Goswamis were so erudite. I'm going to give you an idea. Like Rupa Goswami, he wrote poetry that if you read it backwards, it would read the same as forwards sometimes. He wrote poetry that if you put it in the shape of a chakra or the drum, it would read the same in any direction. It's pretty interesting. If I had time, it'd take me about 2 hours to show you with some slides how this is. Imagine that, or a wheel where it would read the same on each of the spokes on the wheel. These were highly, highly, highly educated people coming from the spiritual world. So here's Prabhupada's summary of the Sandarbhas. All the Sandarbhas are known as the Bhagavat Sandarbha, but there's a particular part of the Shat Sandarbhas that's called the Bhagavat Sandarbha. Okay. And the first part is called the Tattva Sandarbha, and it's proved that Srimad Bhagavatam is the most authoritative evidence directly pointing to the absolute truth. So it proves, that's called epistemology. You know, how do you know what you know? Because that's the first thing that we establish when we're talking to someone. What is the basis of the knowledge that we're presenting? That's called epistemology. Then the second one, the second Sandarbha is called the Bhagavat Sandarbha, draws a distinction between the impersonal Brahman, these are Prabhupada's words, and localized Paramatma, and describes the spiritual world and the domination of the mode of goodness without passion and ignorance, the other two material modes. The second one is also discussions of the eternality of deity worship, omnipotency of the deity, all pervasiveness, that means it's everywhere, how the deity gives shelter to everyone, the subtle and gross potencies of the deities, his personal manifestation, form, quality, and pastimes. So that's the second. The third Sandarbha is called the Paramatma Sandarbha. And in this book, there's a description of the Paramatma Supersoul and an explanation of how the super soul exists in millions and millions of living entities. There are discussions of the differences between the qualitative incarnations and discourses concerning the living entity, Maya, the material world, and the theory of transformation. There's also, I could talk about that, but there's not time. There's also a discussion how the Leela avatar incarnations respond to the desires of the devotees, and how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is characterized by the six opulences, strength, beauty, wealth, fame, knowledge, and renunciation. The fourth Sandarbha is called the Krishna Sandarbha. And in this book, Krishna is proved to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are discussions of Krishna's pastimes and qualities, his superintendence of the Purusha avatars, and also descriptions of Goloka Vrindavan, the eternal place of Krishna, the identity of Goloka and Vrindavan, the Yadavas and the Coward Boys, and the adjustment and equality of the manifest and unmanifest pastimes. Sri Krishna's manifestation Gokul, the queens of Dwarka, as expansions of the internal potency, and superior to them the super excellent gopis. There's also a list of the gopis' names and the discussion of the topmost gopi, Srimati Radharani. The fifth Sandarbha is called the Bhakti Sandarbha. And in this book there's a discussion of how devotional service can be directly executed, how the self manifests itself in its eternal identity through bhakti, a discussion of the self's bliss, as well as how bhakti, even if imperfectly executed, enables one to attain the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's discussion between the differences with the Mahabhagwat and the ordinary devotee, and a discussion of Raghunuga Bhakti, or the specific purpose of becoming a devotee and Lord Krishna, and the comparative study of other perfectional stages. And finally, the sixth Sandarbha is called the Priti Sandarbha. That's the thesis on love of Godhead. It is stated that through love of Godhead, one becomes perfectly liberated and attains the highest goal of life. A distinction is made between the liberated condition of the impersonalist and that of an impersonalist. Of all kinds of liberation, loving service to the Lord is described as the most exalted, and meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face is shown to be the highest perfection of life. Finally, there's a discussion of the overlapping of different rasas, that's called rasavas, and there are discussions of shanta, neutrality, servitorship, taking shelter, parental love, conjugal love, direct transcendental enjoyment, sambhoga, and enjoyment in separation, which is called vipralamba, previous attraction, and the glories of Srimati Radharani. So this is some description of the glories of Srila Jiva Goswami, whose appearance day it is today. So any questions or comments? It's getting late right now. Yet. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there's ways to arrange it so it's like a yantra too.
Each color has different results for chanting.
Yeah, yeah, there's different ways to look at it like that, right.
How does Sandarbha come into that?
How is what?
How does Sandarbha come into that convention?
Are they arranged like yantras? I don't know. But Rupa Goswami's poetry, in many cases are. His different poems are arranged like yantras. I mean, it's really amazing. He arranges some of his poetry like snakes, some of his poetry like chakras, wheels, some of his poetry like drums, mridanga drums. I mean, I should do that presentation one day when we have time. It takes at least an hour and a half to show you what I'm talking about. Because it's a slideshow showing how the different syllables in Sanskrit can be arranged in different ways. Okay, I think it's getting late, and we want everyone to take prasad, right? And we also want to welcome Nanda Kishore and Runti Dave, who come from long distance away, the country of Lotoka. The mother temple, right? Lotoka is the mother temple. Isn't it? First temple. It's the mother temple. It's the mother temple. So he's doing a great job of taking care of our mother. Fantastic. We want to express our appreciation for the sacrifices that this devotee is making for taking care of our mother.
Taking care of us.
Taking care of us, too. They were fortunate to have him back here in Fiji. I was praying for years, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please send him back to Fiji. Yeah, you didn't know what was going on. Anyway, we were praying. I mean, I heard about you, tried to meet you, but by the grace of another devotee, what didn't happen? So, but then, zero. And the older devotees are coming back. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to the divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Ki Jai, Śrīla Jīva Goswāmī, Ki Jai.